honoring God and country, and offering thanks to our exceptional partner, Business Equipment Service. This is KLZ 560, a Crawford Broadcasting Station.
It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. I am Kim Munson, and welcome to the show. We've got a big show planned for you today. Thrilled to have in studio a couple of my sponsorship partners, Karen Levine, award-winning realtor, RE/MAX Alliance. It's great to have you here.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Yeah. And Lauren Levy, you're a new partner. Great to have you. You're with Polygon Lending, and it's great to have you here, too.
Thank you so much. Great to be here, Kim.
So we'll talk with both of you about real estate here in the second segment. And then third and fourth segment, we will have Randall O'Toole join the conversation. Karen, you had presented a question to me. You know, you and I have been on this journey regarding all of this rezoning and what's happening in Denver, and you asked a really interesting question about rezoning. You said, now, Kim, you think it's okay, like, if a farmer is able to rezone his rural land so that he can sell it and it can develop, but what about rezoning for these four, five, six-story apartment buildings? You know, why is that not okay with me? And I'm like, that is such a good question. So let's ask Randall O'Toole. So
let's ask it.
We're going to do that in the third and fourth segment. So welcome to the show. And let's see here. We talk about freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism is ultimately force, and it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, property, or freedom via force, whether with a weapon policy or unpredictable and excessive taxation. We continue to see through rules and regulations and policy kind of the socialization of these key things that we would like to have efficient, affordable. And that's transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, and data. It seems like when government gets involved, the price goes up, the supply goes down. But Steve just got this hot off the press. He said the Republican National Committee announced a new campaign designed to highlight socialism's consequences through the accounts of people who have fled Venezuela. When you hear firsthand from people from Venezuela or Cuba who have dealt with socialism, who've been driven from their countries, who've dealt with the poverty and the instability it brings to their government, I think it really resonates. So we've launched victimsofsocialism.org so we can hear their stories firsthand, and it's very powerful. And you know what? We've done that a little bit, Steve, and I've thought that's a really good idea, so I think that we should embrace that as well. But thanks for finding this.
Well, I always stop by Fox News, you know, in the last half hour before you get here, and that one just jumped out at me.
Yeah, and I think that we have a number of friends that have experienced socialism. We had Juliana Day yesterday. She was talking about Peru as they were moving towards a more centrally planned government, that the middle class disappears. And we're seeing that in our major cities. You get the haves, the have-nots, and the middle class disappears. And the middle class is so important for your business, Karen, that people are able to buy homes and have their little plot of land. And that, I mean, you're a real proponent of private property rights.
We are. The Realtor Party is definitely a proponent of private property rights. And I think the key is home ownership has built wealth over America for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. And you too, Lauren, you know, you see in your business that helping the middle class be able to buy homes it helps people thrive and flourish.
Oh, absolutely. I agree 100% with what Karen said. I mean, homeownership is where we teach people to get started, and it's a lot of people's initial investment, and it just helps them build their wealth for the future.
So we'll continue to talk about that, but it is so important. Thank you to the team, producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for your support, your good work, and all you listeners. Thank you to you. Each of you are valued, you're treasured. Strive for excellence and do something every day to take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. My voter's guide is out. You can find it at kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And I am a no on CC, a no on DD, And you can take a look at it. I actually pulled all of the ballots from the Front Range, and there's a number of different Tabor questions, tax questions on there. And two things, if the words start with without raising taxes, or if you look in the body and you see Article 10, Section 20, that means they're going to try to de-Tabor the additional revenue over population plus inflation. Vote no on those issues. And we are going to, I was talking with Britta Horn, we had her on last week, about this whole Building a Better Colorado. And this is, it's an organization, there's some very influential people that are on the board of this, and Building a Better Colorado, nonpartisan, having a conversation, all those things sound really, really good. But I attended two of the meetings. I actually have a full recording of another one of the meetings. And they had made the statement that they were not going to take a stand, that it was nonpartisan, that they were not taking a position on any of these things. Well, I find it a bit disingenuous because the project manager, Reeves Brown, has actually been out in presentations giving the pro-CC narrative. And in fact, he was this last weekend, he was just up in Grand Junction giving pro-CC, and Rose Puglisi was the no on CC. And, you know, if something is such a good idea, you don't have to hide behind deception. You can be honest with folks. And this whole conversation thing, we're going to unpack this as we go through this over the next up to until Election Day. But they basically bring people in, they ask for you to refer people to this meeting, and then everything is guided towards kind of a manipulated, preordained decision, and then they issued this report that said, you know, a big percentage of folks basically want to get rid of Tabor, and they want to get rid of these tax refunds, and it was all skewed. And so we are going to continue to shed light on that, because if something's a good idea, you can tell the truth about it. You don't have to be manipulative. You can go to my website, kimmunson.com. All the podcasts of the shows and show recaps are there. And we've also got something really cool that's going to be happening on November 1st, and that is the movie No Safe Spaces. And, in fact, tomorrow morning we're going to have the director on the show. And he said there's a difference between liberals and leftists. Many liberals are concerned about the lack of diversity of ideas on college campuses. College campuses are the most dangerous places in America for free thought, free speech, and free expression. And it's beyond me how we as parents work our tails off to send our kids to college to pay the salaries of some of these professors that are actually moving the ideas to the left and not presenting both sides of the equation. And so this movie, No Safe Spaces, it will be here in Denver November 1st at the Highlands Ranch AMC 24. It's featuring Dennis Prager, Adam Carolla, Jordan Peterson, and a number of others. And if they get a lot of traction on this, then they'll get additional screenings and additional theaters. So you can get more information at nosafespaces.com. And that's going to be very cool. The show is jam-packed, but inspiration for today is Booker T. Washington. He was born a slave on a small farm in Western Virginia. He was 9 years old when the Civil War ended. His humble but stern rearing included his working in a salt furnace when he was 10 and serving as a houseboy for a white family, where he first learned the virtues of frugality, cleanliness, and personal morality. He was born in 1856. He died in 1915. He was an educator, reformer, first president and principal developer of Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute, which is now Tuskegee University, and the most influential spokesman for Black Americans between 1895 and 1915. And he says, success is to be measured not so much by the position that one has reached in life as by the obstacles which he has overcome while trying to succeed. Thought that was a good one. So, okay, our funnies. Are you ready, Kieran? Are you ready, Lauren?
Yep.
Steve, ready? Okay. A mathematician, an accountant, and a politician apply for the same job. The interviewer calls in the mathematician and asks, what did 2 plus 2 equal? The mathematician replies, 4. The interviewer asks, 4 exactly? The mathematician looks at the interviewer incredulously and says, yes, 4 exactly. Then the interviewer calls in the accountant and asks the same question. What do 2 + 2 equal? The accountant says, well, on average, 4, give or take 10%, but on average, 4. Then the interviewer calls in the politician and poses the same question. Says, what do 2 + 2 equal? The politician gets up, locks the door, closes the shade, sits down next to the interviewer and says, what do you want it to equal? Ha ha! And Patty, you know, has been researching on this Good Jobs First Colorado tracker, subsidy tracker. And we've been looking for millions of reasons why you should vote no on CC. If the state needs more money, why are tax incentives and credits, grants, et cetera, given to corporations? And according to Good Jobs First Colorado Tracker, the Colorado Office of Economic Development and International Trade through the Enterprise Zone, this is just one of the programs that the state offers. They offer 2 awards as a tax credit rebate to WPX Energy, which is a company engaged in hydrocarbon exploration with a market cap of over $4 billion. They received $9,694,000 during the years 2011, 12, and 16. Adding to this previous total, we started this a week ago Monday, 2 weeks ago Monday, I guess, the grand total for offers accepted by corporations given subsidies by Colorado state agencies is $194 million. And please note that WPX Energy and the other companies we're discussing are successful companies. Our point is that these companies do not need government money to maintain their success. We believe the free market should stand alone without any government interference. It's better to cut taxes and regulations across the board without any preferential treatment for chosen companies that allows the government to pick winners and losers. So the question on the table is, how is it that we're giving corporations all these incentives and tax breaks, and then we've got Prop CC, where all of these PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties are saying, hey, hardworking Coloradans, we want to have your Tabor refunds forever. Just give the money to us. And one other thing that Patty found is the Colorado Sun said there's been $1 billion that has flowed in from venture investors to Front Range companies this year. And that's local startups. That's risky companies. And we're seeing out-of-state venture capitalists coming to Colorado and investing here. So our point is there is money, there's money there. We don't have to have the state of Colorado picking winners and losers. And so on that note, let's go to break. When we come back, Karen Levine, RE/MAX Alliance, and Lauren Levy with Polygon Lending are in studio, and we're going to talk about real estate here in the Front Range because it's been a wild ride over the last few years. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson.com.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Coming up on the Mike Gallagher Show, the John McCain, Mitt Romney types of Republicans keep criticizing Trump on Syria. Will that continue after Pelosi's visit to the Middle East? That and more coming up.
Mike Gallagher, 8 to 11 a.m. on KLZ 560.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. I love all these old westerns, that songs that Charlie has found. So let's jump in here, though. Karen Levine, Great to have you here. Lauren Levy, great to have you here. Real estate, this real estate market here in the Front Range. Karen, do you have the most recent report? What's going on there?
The September report came out earlier this month, and we're not seeing a lot of change. I think we've discussed the fact that our under contracts, our pending sales, have been up month over month from a year ago, and the solds are trailing behind. In other words, we're not seeing the percentage of solds reflected in the percentage of under contracts. So what does that mean to you, Mr. Buyer or Mr. Seller? I think that sellers are a little more open to taking contingent offers, contingent on maybe the sale of another home or offering more time, just being a little more flexible with buyers, which we haven't seen in the most recent years. And I also think that there's still a lot of activity out there, and there's a sense maybe our market's becoming a little more balanced, a little less seller heavy, but it's very, very local, real estate is. I'm seeing properties that I put on the market in all sorts of different price ranges, some that are just popping right off the market. We've priced them appropriately, and others that are lagging behind. So very important for those out there in the real estate market or thinking of buying and selling that they seek a realtor, a professional as myself, to help them navigate the real estate market.
Well, and that is for sure. And Karen, you and I have been friends for a long time. I mean, probably over 30 years. And you are a true professional. And, you know, I think working with people, getting that priced right is pretty important right off the bat, because if you don't, then people can, I think, get discouraged. And so, you know, definitely give you a call.
Well, and it is humorous, you know, when we are used to the new normal, which was a seller putting their home on the market maybe on a Thursday and showing it over the weekend, maybe having an open house and receiving multiple offers and being under contract on Tuesday. Well, sellers need to know that it's more likely that's going to take 3 to 4 weekends instead of just the one.
And Lauren Levy, what about, you know, interest rates? Because mortgages are so important, you know, in this whole thing. So what about interest rates? What do you think?
You know, it's very interesting. We have noticed sort of a wave in the interest rates lately. I think when what the market hears and from the news sometimes lags. And so we'll hear that the Fed lowers rates, for example, the prime rate or the federal funds rate, which affects the prime rate, and people think automatically mortgage rates are going to drop. Oftentimes, we see that that actually spurs the economy or spurs the stock market to go up, which pulls people out of bonds, and actually mortgage rates can have a negative effect on mortgage rates. So lately, we've seen where refinance or purchase rates maybe hit 3.5, maybe just a month ago. They're closer to 3.875, back approaching 4 now, which I think surprises a lot of people when they call.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it goes hand in hand. The higher the rate, the less buying power someone has. And so it does affect their ability to, you know, what price range they can be in, what they can pre-qualify for. So it's always good to call and find out where rates are at, you know, at the time you're ready to make an offer to work with someone like Karen, or just so you can lock in your purchasing power and have an idea of really what you can afford on a monthly payment.
What about this whole pre-qualification thing? Is that something you help people with?
Absolutely. It's extremely important, because the last thing that I know I want to see, or someone like Karen wants to see, is you don't want to show someone a house, have them fall in love with it, just to find out that they can't buy it. And so it's extremely important before you even go looking to know exactly what you can afford, so that you don't look at something that's overpriced for you, so that, you know, when you have to step down to your price range, it's not as nice.
We don't want discouragement.
Right. That's for sure.
So it's extremely important to get pre-qualified first,
so that you can really, so that you can plan. So a question on that pre-qualification: do you lock in an interest rate on a pre-qualification, or how does that work?
You know, it depends, because there's two terms that are out there, and a lot of times there's confusion. There's a pre-qualification and a pre-approval. And a pre-qualification, someone like me will just kind of, I've been doing this a long time, I can look at your information and pretty much tell you if you're going to qualify or not. A pre-approval actually hits an underwriter's desk and is a true loan approval. And so depending on the competitive nature of the home you're trying to buy, sometimes people require a pre-approval before they'll accept your offer. So in that instance, you can lock in a rate.
Okay.
If you're ready to, you know, to go buying right away. It depends on where you're at in your process.
Okay. And Karen, we're coming into the autumn. Mm-hmm. Is this a good time to be selling, buying? I mean, isn't real estate a bit seasonal?
It is seasonal, but as we're finding, just in life in general, life is moving quickly, and people are making decisions not as seasonally as they have in the past. So the fourth quarter is a time where buyers may have a few less choices, but they'll have less competition. So there's opportunity out there. Sellers who are on the market in the fourth quarter generally are a tad more motivated than sellers in the springtime. So there might be a little more opportunity for buyers. Another thing I'd love to share, and we'll probably get into affordability and what's happening in our marketplace, but effective October 15th, the FHA rules changed, and the Realtor Party, or the National Association of Realtors, is very excited that after 10 years of work with our lovely government, we have been able to loosen requirements for condominiums to get approved for FHA financing. And typically a first-time home buyer is going to buy with an FHA loan because it requires the least amount of money down for a down payment. And so they're lowering the percentage of how many owner occupants have to be in a complex. They're making spot approvals much easier. So we saw those changes go into effect last week, and that should free up a little bit more inventory on the first-time home buyer, more affordable inventory for our buyers.
You know, Karen, I hope we get something going on in Colorado, though, so that we can get people into ownership instead of all these apartments. But it's been the, the construction defects legislation. We just can't seem to get something done about that. And, you know, that's that first step for people to actually have some kind of ownership so they can start to create equity.
Exactly. And I think we're seeing the marketplace being willing to accept a little more risk, which is really what construction defects employed on developers. It created an environment for them to take on more risk and obtaining what would be called errors in emissions insurance went skyrocketed.
And I think attorneys got involved on that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're seeing a little bit of softening there. So that should be helpful as well. We are seeing some multifamily come out of the ground in Jefferson County, and that's pretty exciting to see.
Multifamily ownership.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, finally.
Okay. Yeah. And Lauren, so I really haven't talked with people about getting financed for a condo. And so, you know, how can you help people out with that?
Well, I mean, the condo financing isn't a whole lot different than single family financing, other than the fact that there's something that we refer to as a condo questionnaire that gets completed, and it asks several questions that Karen just touched on. Number one, it asks about percentage of owner occupancy, which is very important to the lenders. And it comes down to risk. The lenders believe that a person is more likely to let an investment property go into foreclosure than the roof over their head. So when it comes to protecting in a time of trouble, they're going to protect their primary residence first. So if they have a complex with a lot of investment properties, they look at that as riskier.
That can make sense. Got it. Okay.
So the condo questionnaire asks about percentage of investment property ownership in there. It also asks, talking about this builder liability thing, it asks a question about, is there a lawsuit involved in the HOA? And I just had this yesterday. I got a call from a woman who's looking to do a reverse mortgage. And thankfully, she was open. The spot approval thing happened because her condo complex is not approved as an entirety through the HOA, but now she heard about the spot approval thing, which she hopes can help her get an FHA loan, which is a reverse mortgage. And reverse mortgages are governed by the FHA.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
They are FHA loans. And so they're under the same approval process as a regular purchase of an FHA loan by a first-time home buyer. But she disclosed to me that her HOA is in the middle of suing the builder for defects, which what that causes, and I know why the HOA is doing it, to get the money for the repairs, but it's going to cause a huge problem for all the current owners in that complex if they want to refi or sell because their buyers won't be able to buy because of this lawsuit. And it's going to stop pretty much all transactions in that complex. So it is a big thing when an HOA decides to sue the builder.
Well, and I think the problem with that, Karen, was that sometimes the HOA of the condominium may not have informed everybody that they were doing that. And the attorneys had gotten involved. And in fact, I had talked to a young couple. It took them several years to sell their condominium because, and they wanted to buy a house because of just this. And certainly if there's, you know, if there's a real problem, you want to be able to solve that. But my understanding was that these lawsuits did not allow the builder or the developer to actually try to remedy it. They just went ahead and went right to suing.
Right, and that's where the construction defect legislation really caused harm to the consumer, is it didn't afford the developer / builder to make repairs when things happened. And so that's unfortunate. The one, I would say, when we have had, we being the Colorado Association of Realtors, is you talk about homeowners not knowing about the lawsuit because the board of directors went ahead without approval. And we at least got that changed in the legislation last year.
Okay.
So now each homeowner needs to be informed and has the ability to vote whether to enter into the lawsuit or not. And so they're at least getting the majority of the homeowners involved in that process and not just the board of directors.
Okay.
You know, Kim, it comes down to risk. One thing the listeners should know is if you're a lender and you're being asked to lend $200,000 on a condo, the bank wants to know that the condo they're lending on is in good condition. Mm-hmm. And so if there is a lawsuit with the HOA, why are they suing them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had one maybe 15 years ago where all the balconies of the complex were pulling away from the building.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wouldn't want to walk out on that balcony.
That's not safe.
No. And so the lender doesn't want to lend on that. It's an unsafe home. And so the lenders want to make sure they're lending on a completed and good working order property.
Right. You know, and things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things happen in life. And so the idea that you could not remedy it, you just went to a lawsuit. And that was where you saw the attorneys and all, you know, saw a whole bunch of money coming in. Or potential.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you're, you know, looking at it from that standpoint, instead of trying to remedy the problem, you get into trouble ultimately. And so this has kept a lot of people out of that first time opportunity mm-hmm. to buy a condo. So we're going to go to break. One other quick question though. I think Lauren, for this, what is the percentage on a first time buyer FHA loan? What is the percentage that they need to bring to the table?
So FHA loans require 3.5% down.
Okay.
That's standard. There are subsidy programs out there like CHAFA and other ones that are more local county level that can provide the assistance for that 3.5% down. But it is a combination somewhere to get to 3.5% down on an FHA loan.
Okay. Well, we're going to go to break here. We're going to talk to Jason, though, first. But Lauren Levy with Polygon Lending, it's great to have you here. Karen Levine, REMAX Alliance, it's great to have you here as well. And Jason McBride, you're on the line. How are you this morning?
Hey, got a studio full of great folks there.
Yes, we do. And I'm blessed with really fantastic partners. And just a note on that, when you go to my website, you can see all of my partners. But each and every one I highly endorse and recommend. They're all really fine people. So Jason McBride, though, yesterday we were talking about these wash sales. And what happens if you sell a stock at a loss and then buy it back in less than 30 days? Do you lose the loss forever for tax purposes?
Well, no, you don't, Kim. You might just have to wait a little bit longer. Here's how it works. Let's say you bought a stock at 10 and then you sold it at 8, so you lost $2 a share. But then it drops down to 5 really quick in less than 30 days after you sold it, and now you think it's really a bargain, so you buy it back. So you can't use the $2 loss as a loss on that sale that you made at 8, but what you would do, Kim, is you have to add the $2 of a loss to your new buy price of 5. So you bought the stock back at 5, but for tax purposes, you own it at 7. So if you sell it at 7, you made $2 on that trade, but for tax purposes, you broke even and don't owe any taxes. Does that make sense?
Well, it does and it doesn't, but yeah.
Right.
It does. So if I sold it at $7.50, I'd have a gain of only 50 cents then. Is that what you're saying?
For tax purposes, that's right.
Okay. What about Roth conversions? Maybe a better bargain than you think because your tax rate's probably lower than you think, right?
Well, I think it is, and I just don't believe the tax rates are going to stay this low forever, and they're lower than most people think. So let's say you're married with two kids, your income's $200,000 a year, and you're only taking the standard deduction. I mean, what do you guys think your federal tax rate is?
Anybody, Lauren, do you want to guess?
25.
Okay, 25 is on the table.
25. Well, actually, it's about 13 and a quarter.
Oh,
and
wow.
People are surprised. They think they're paying more than they are, but our tax rates really are low. So, you know, even at that pretty decent high level of income, your total taxes with state is still under 18%. So if you convert, let's say, $25,000 from your IRA to the Roth, It pushes your federal rate for the whole year up to about 14.4. Your state stays the same, so you're still under a 20% total tax rate. And what do you guys think? I think that's not so bad.
I think it makes a lot of sense for sure. And, you know, this whole Roth conversion thing, this is a great strategy. And folks need to give you a call over there at Presidential, 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. We're coming in on the end of the year. And, you know, get in there and take a look. Let Jason and the team over there take a look at what's going on with your economic well-being. And this Roth conversion may make a lot of sense.
Well, it might. And don't forget, the 12% bracket, Kim, goes all the way up to about $79,000 of taxable income. And if you're there, I mean, your rate is in the single digits. So if you're going to land under the $79,000 taxable income, I think soaking up the rest of that cheap bracket with a Roth conversion, it's like a tax get-out-of-jail-free card almost. But things could change, and you make a good point. You have to do the Roth conversion by year end. You don't get until April to do it like you do for a contribution. So this is a great time to come in, talk to one of our great people, and figure out if a Roth conversion between now and year end could be a really good tax move for you.
Okay, and you don't have to convert the whole amount. You could only you only have to convert what works best for you from your planning standpoint, right?
That's right. Yeah, you can customize your conversion. Custom conversions. It sounds like a car shop, but it's not.
Okay, so Natalie will be at the switchboard at 7:30. Give Jason and the team over there a call at Presidential Wealth Management. Phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one.
And Karen Levine, Lauren Levy, we're going to go to break. When we come back, the questions on the table with Randall O'Toole. These are getting so interesting, Karen.
Very good.
So we'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You only have a few days left for three scary movies under the stars. The 88 Drive-In Theater will close for the season Thursday, October 24th. So get there now. Open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Thursday, see an independent film that takes place in a drive-in theater. 47 hours, rated R, followed by Joker and Rambo Last Blood. Admission is only $9 per person and includes all three features. Get directions now at 88drivein.net.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back. This is Kim Munson. It's the Kim Munson Show. Thrilled to have in studio with me, Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance and Lauren Levy with Polygon Lending. And on the line, Randall O'Toole. He is with the Cato Institute, also with the Independence Institute. He is an expert in urban planning, transportation, and housing. And Randall, it's so great to have you with us again. Thank you so much. You're on out on the West Coast. It's a little earlier out there. Thank you, though. It's great to have you.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Okay. You had sent a recent piece that you just did, The Case for Single-Family Neighborhoods. And you and I have had conversations, and Karen and I have had conversations with you about, first of all, the case for single-family neighborhoods. So quickly give us that again if people had not heard that show or just as a refresher.
Well, the problem is that cities like Denver and Portland and San Francisco have drawn urban growth boundaries around themselves to limit what they call urban sprawl. In other words, to limit the kind of housing that most Americans prefer, which is low-density single-family neighborhoods. And these urban growth boundaries have made housing really expensive, especially on the West Coast, but also in Boulder. And instead of removing the boundaries to make housing more affordable, the urban planners are blaming single-family homeowners. They're calling them NIMBYs because they don't want to have apartments built in their neighborhoods. The urban planners want to densify the neighborhoods by building four and five-story apartment buildings in the middle of single-family neighborhoods. And anybody who resists that is called a racist and so on and so forth. Well, the reality is that densifying single-family neighborhoods won't make housing more affordable because high-density housing costs more than per square foot than low-density housing. And the single-family housing isn't what made housing unaffordable in the first place. It was the urban growth boundaries. So we have this issue where single-family neighborhoods are being demonized because urban planners really want to densify neighborhoods, and they're using this demonization to justify it.
Well, and you sent over this piece that you did October 15th, 2019, The Case for Single-Family Neighborhoods, and people can find that where?
You can go to my website, which is the Anti-Planner. It's ti.org/anti-planner. But if you just Google Anti-Planner, I'm the first thing on the list. And the Anti-Planner has been publishing a weekly four-page policy bulletin, and this is just one we did a couple weeks ago.
Now, something that just took my breath away is that you said that Oregon and Minneapolis have both abolished single-family zoning. Karen, this has got to probably just, you know, really be a great concern to the realtor party, right?
Well, yeah. In abolishing it, does that mean there will be no more single-family housing in those metropolitan areas?
Well, it means that a neighborhood of single-family homes isn't going to stay all single-family homes. You might buy a single-family home in the neighborhood, but your next-door neighbor might decide to tear down their single-family home and put up an apartment or a fourplex or something like that. And, you know, the neighborhoods of single-family homes were built to accommodate a certain level of density. The streets are so wide enough for that density. They have water and sewer lines for that density. You start putting in more density, and you're going to have more congestion. You're going to have more cost because eventually the city's going to have to tear up the streets and put in heavier duty water and sewer lines to accommodate the higher densities. And so there's no assurance that your neighborhood is going to stay single family. Your house might. Although, in some cases, Portland has rezoned single-family neighborhoods for higher densities, and it's minimum density zoning. So if your house burns down, you might be required to replace it with a duplex or a quadruplex or some other multifamily dwelling.
Interesting. And I would say that's very reflective in the conversations Kim and I have had regarding Blueprint Denver, which Blueprint Denver has done the same thing. And they've said, we don't want density in just certain neighborhoods. We want to spread the density throughout. So it seems to me you're going to get the same result as what we're seeing in Minneapolis and Portland.
Exactly. And the residents in single-family neighborhoods resist this. They opposed it strongly in Portland. The California legislature has a bill to require densification of all neighborhoods that are served by transit, which essentially means everything in the San Francisco Bay Area and Los Angeles and other major cities. And neighborhoods and cities have resisted this, and so far the legislature hasn't passed the bill, but it's likely that they're going to eventually, because there's so much pressure from the planners and so much pressure from the people who are concerned about housing prices, who are being misled by the planners into thinking that densification is going to make housing more affordable.
Well, and Randall, we really saw this, I think, out here in Lakewood. I don't know if you had watched that at all. There was this Initiative 200 that was brought forward, which basically Lakewood passed, the people of Lakewood passed, and it is growth limits. And I feel it was a knee-jerk reaction to people starting to see the real results of all of these city planners up and down the Metro Mayor's Caucus, all of this, that they've been moving towards this densification. And now people in the neighborhoods are starting to see the actual results. And they're like, wait a minute, we don't like this. So I think it was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to what was going on.
Well, that may be, but, I think people are confused about growth and confused about development and who's pushing it. Oftentimes they blame the developers for wanting densification when it's the planners who want densification. Developers will just build what they can build and what they can sell. And if the planners say, okay, if you want to build a single-family home, we'll put you through 5 years of misery trying to get a permit to do it. But if you want to build a four-story apartment building, we'll grant approval right away. Well, then the developers are going to propose four-story apartment buildings.
Right. And so policy is dictating that versus the free market. Lauren, do you have a comment on this?
No, I mean, I think it's interesting. We talked in the break about the four-story condo limits and why what it was about four stories. And I had just mentioned that was a deal for lenders for a long time. The fact that if a condo was over four stories, it became considered more of a risk. I actually built a home that I sold in the Platte Park area of Denver, and took advantage of the fact that the property had been rezoned from R1 single family to R2, and made it a duplex. And I wasn't the first one. It was the whole neighborhood looks like that now. So it's exactly what Randall's talking about here, where they've taken a neighborhood of mostly single family homes, and now they're all duplexes or side by sides, whatever you want to call them in that area. So definitely has increased the amount of cars in the area. And
right. Well, and yet I think the other piece people do need to understand is much of Denver's zoning wasn't single family initially. It was actually zoned R2. So a lot of properties that had single family on it had the ability then to convert to duplexes. And I know that because my stepdaughter wanted to get into kind of building development work, and we started looking for larger lots in kind of those new hip areas. For you, it was Platte Park, Highland, the Highlands, Sloan's Lake, those areas. And we looked for that zoning already in place. So in fairness, a lot of those were initially zoned to be able to convert to that, which whether was that hindsight, foresight, policy in place ahead of time to play out what Randall's talking about, I don't know, because every time I'm on the show, I just learn how much I don't know.
That's why.
When zoning was first developed in the 19-teens and 20s, many realtors and developers thought that they could make more money from multifamily. And so they lobbied cities to zone more multifamily than single family. And what happened was, it turned out single family was the most popular, single family was the most profitable, and so a lot of neighborhoods that had been zoned multifamily were really single family. And I don't know if that's really foresight. I think it's just really a misjudgment on the part of the realtors or the part of whoever it was that was lobbying for more single family. And later, we can see that some of those neighborhoods can be developed to higher densities today, and yet you still have the pressure for rezoning today. Portland, for example, has historically been zoned for three times the population that its current population is, and yet that isn't enough. They want to be zoned for five or ten times the population that the current population is. At least the urban planners want to zone it for that. And so it doesn't matter that the zoning would allow for higher densities. Regional government in Portland issued orders that every city in the Portland area, every city and suburb, Beaverton, Gresham, Happy Valley, everything, had to rezone everything, at least part of their cities, to higher densities to meet certain density targets.
Wow.
This was part of the 2040 plan that had been written in the 1990s, and some communities resisted, and they were told, if you don't rezone, we'll come in and rezone for you. You don't have any choice. We have the power, and we're going to do it.
Oh, my gosh. It seems like the way Oregon goes, the Colorado goes, and Karen had mentioned Blueprint Denver, which I have not gotten through all 300 pages of that, but I've been working on it. But it continues to talk about using rezoning to get more density. So the question on the table, Randall, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, Karen and I were together at a presentation, and I kind of challenged a little bit on rezoning and the speaker. And Karen said, "Now, Kim, why is it okay with you if, say, a farmer or rancher is able to rezone their land, say, to sell it to a developer for single family homes, but yet you kind of get your blood pressure up when you're seeing rezoning for, you know, in a single family neighborhood for a, like, an apartment building?" And I looked at her and I'm like, well, that is a really good question. Let's get Randall O'Toole on the show and ask him. So that's the question on the table, Randall. This is the Kim Munson Show. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Greenwood Village, Tina Francone with Straightforward Shooting, and Grand Lake U.S. Constitution Week for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, thrilled to have a couple of my valued partners in studio with me, and that is Karen Levine, RE/MAX Alliance, and Lauren Levy with Polygon Lending, and Randall O'Toole, who is just a really smart expert on all kinds of things. He's at the Anti-Planner. You can find, and he does a policy piece each week. His most recent one was the case for single-family neighborhoods. Now, Randall, the question on the table is, why do I think it's okay if a farmer rancher is able to rezone their land to build single-family homes, but I'm so frustrated with the rezoning of single-family neighborhoods to put in 4, 5, 6-story apartment buildings. And somehow I know that there's a difference, but I couldn't articulate it to Karen. So what would you say to that?
Well, I think it's the difference between upzoning and downzoning. But basically all the zoning in the cities was accomplished by the mid-1950s. City zoning zoned neighborhoods, large swaths of neighborhoods for single-family homes, and the homeowners in those neighborhoods welcomed it because it gave them a stability, and it assured that their values would not decline if somebody put in a shopping mall or a gravel pit or even a large apartment building next door to them. So people welcomed it, and since then, it's been, 70, 80 years. So pretty much everybody in a city who lives in a neighborhood of single-family homes bought that neighborhood that was already zoned. They knew it was zoned that way. They didn't expect that they would have the property right to redevelop their property. And I think there's kind of a unspoken agreement here that I consent to not be able to develop my property to higher densities on the condition that all of my neighbors also can't develop their properties to higher densities, and we will have a stable neighborhood of single-family homes. Now, for farmers, it's completely different. There was a wave of zoning in rural areas in the 70s and 80s, and so many farmers who thought that eventually they'd be able to someday maybe sell their land and develop it for their kids and so on, suddenly they can't do it. They've been downzoned. They've been told you can't ever use your land for anything except farming. And if conditions change, and they are changing because crop yields in the United States are growing faster than our population, so farm land values are not growing compared to urban land values. So they're being told that even though your farm is becoming worthless over time as a farm, you're not going to be allowed to use it for anything except farming. And they're losing value because of that. Their value isn't being stabilized or increased because of that. And I think that's an important difference.
And so, Randall, would that have been policy changes that have taken the rights away from those farmers to be able to then, I guess you would say, was that upzoning their land? Because I used an example with Kim, a dear friend of mine who's recently passed away, had a dairy farm in the heart of Arvada, which is a suburb of Denver. Land is very precious anywhere, but there we hadn't seen much new construction because of lack of land. And Colin and his family knew that at some point in time that was an opportunity for them. And they have since sold the land to a developer builder, and it's now Richard's Farm, a lovely single-family home community. And so I said to Kim, that was a great opportunity for that family. And you're saying those opportunities are becoming less and less to the farmer?
Yes, they were lucky to be inside of an urban growth boundary, but farmers outside of Dr. Cog's urban growth boundary don't have that opportunity. Up until recently, they did have that opportunity, but then they were downzoned. They were told, okay, you can't develop anymore, and they lose that opportunity. And, I think people have should have property rights. And one right is if you have 1,000 acres and you're not disturbing your neighbors, you should have the right to develop that property to higher densities. On the other hand, one possible property right is if you live in a neighborhood of single-family homes, you're willing to say, I'm willing to give up my right to develop my property to higher densities as long as all of my neighbors give up their rights, too. That's a property right, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people, when they buy into a neighborhood of single-family homes, it's already zoned single-family, they are agreeing to that right. And they are agreeing to it willingly because they feel like it offers their home more value and more stability. And when we say, okay, we're going to upzone you, we're going to zone you for multifamily, they feel like their property rights are being taken away. And if you talk to these people who the planners call NIMBYs, they'll talk about their property rights. They'll say, we had a right to not be developed, not be over-developed. developed, not be densified, and they're taking away that right.
Man, we see such a movement in the whole metro area, and like you mentioned with Dr. Cog. So, Randall, we are just about out of time. This is such an important piece, the case for single-family neighborhoods. And again, where can people find that, Randall?
Just Google anti-planner and look at my policy briefs. Which number is it, about 23?
It is number 24.
24, oh, so it's just last week.
Yes.
Okay, so just Google anti-planner or ti.org/anti-planner.
Okay, Randall O'Toole, thank you so much. And I know you're getting up early to do this and really appreciate it.
Well, I have to fly out of here today anyway, so I had to get up to answer the phone.
Okay, sounds great. So thank you, Randall O'Toole. And again, the anti-planner, just Google that. And Lauren Levy, Polygon Lending, it's so great to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And I greatly appreciate your partnership.
Yeah.
And Karen, it's always great to have you here. I learned, together we are learning so much.
We are. And let's continue the conversation.
We will continue. Let's do it again next month. How's that sound?
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. So you can go to my website, kimmonson.com. That's MONSON.com, and look at sponsors. And we're actually, you can connect with our with Karen there, and you can connect with Lauren there as well. So that is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And Karen, it's just always great to have you here.
Thank you. Good to see you, Lauren.
So we'll get we'll get the date on that as well. So again, go to the Anti-Planner, the case for single family neighborhoods. And, you know, I realize that it is so important that people have the opportunity to be able to buy their own property and to be able to have their own home. And although you have the planners say that people don't want that, I find most people really do. So, okay, so it's great to have you here. And our quote for today, again, is Booker T. Washington. He says that excellence is to do a common thing in an uncommon way. So again, Booker T. Washington said, excellence is to do a common thing in an uncommon way. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Fast on a rough road, riding high through the mountains, climbing, twisting, turning further from my home. Young, like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
KLZ AM HD Denver, the source AM and FM. AM 560 and 100.7 FM. 560thesource.com.